Hey there, welcome to another edition of the Bernie Miklas Show here on my YouTube channel. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for leaving so many comments. Appreciate the like buttons that you push, and we'll keep them coming. Today on the Bernie Show, I want to talk about Nolan Arenado. And I realized we just did a video about him a little while back. It might have been last week or the week before. But there's an update, and I think we can dive deeper into Nolan Arenado's future with the Cardinals or future elsewhere. So on Wednesday, at the general managers meetings in San Antonio, John Mozeliak, Cardinals president of baseball operations, he held court with the local reporters who were covering it, including Derek Gould, John Dent, and Katie Wu. And he was asked about the players, the Cardinals players that have the no trade clauses, because Mo had said that he would be talking to each one of them just to kind of feel them out about if they had any thoughts about staying with the Cardinals or maybe welcoming a trade. So we all know Wilson Contreras is staying. They're moving him to first base. He's enthusiastic about remaining with the Cardinals, and I'm glad that he is. We also know, according to Derek Gould's reporting, that Sonny Gray has indicated to the Cardinals that he wants to stay, although that wasn't 100%, but it sounds like he wants to stay. So for the purposes of our conversation here today, let's just assume he's going to stay. That means the Cardinals would be down to two players who still have no trade clauses. The first would be Miles Michaelis. And the second would be their third baseman, Nolan Arenado. But let me read you the quote in case you didn't see it, or just to, you know, refresh your memory. This is Mo, and I'm quoting John Mozeliak. Quote, "I've spoken with everyone, and most have indicated they want to be a part of this. I've had an individual ask me to explore a few things, so we will try to do that, but I suspect that is for between now and the winter meetings. I'd prefer not to name the player for leverage in terms of trying to do something with him," meaning in a trade. So listen, all signs point to that player being Nolan Arenado. I mean, you know, Michaelis is due $17.7 million, so that for next season, that would cool his trade market unless a team is really determined they need a back of the rotation guy, 200 innings, provide 30 or more starts. And believe me, you don't have to believe me, but I know there is some value in that. Durability and innings and starts. There is value in that. Even though his ERA over the last couple of years is a little bit over 5 runs per game. I suppose the Cardinals could absorb some of the cost to make it easier to move Michaelis, but unless it's a place he really, really wants to be, why would he approve of a trade? He's got it easy in St. Louis. He has it good in St. Louis. The people that run the Cardinals believe in him. They like him. They're happy that he's here. Now, you can grouse about that. I'm just telling you how the way they feel. So he's got a good situation in St. Louis, and unless he just has this, you know, all of a sudden this fever to go out and get with a winning team, well, maybe at the trade deadline next year that can happen. I don't know. But it can't be Miles Michaelis. I got to believe it's going to be Nolan Arenado. I mean, it's just common sense, right? We went over this before, but we're going to go through it again because I got some things to add. So Arenado turns 34 in April. He's got 3 years left on his contract, which runs through 2027. We all know, as we've talked about a lot, you amongst yourselves, me with you, talking to myself. I've said this a lot. He basically has an allergic reaction to losing. He doesn't handle it well. He doesn't wear it well, and it's not good for him or for the team, because I think it really affects him in a lot of ways. Mostly because he was scarred by his experience with the Colorado Rockies. And let's revisit that a little bit, just so you know what I'm talking about. So in Colorado, Arenado was part of only 2 winning teams in 8 years. In the 6 losing seasons that he were a part of, the Rockies were a total of 110 games under .500. Ooh, wow. And after being traded to the Cardinals, okay, the first 2 years went okay. You know, they made the playoffs in 21. They won 93 games in 22. But they haven't made the playoffs in each of the last two seasons. So in 12 major league seasons, Arenado's teams have made it to the postseason only four times in 12 years, two in Colorado, two in St. Louis. And making matters worse, the Rockies and the Cardinals, when they have made the playoffs with Arenado as their third baseman, they are a combined 1-for-7. Excuse me. That's, I'm making it sound like a hitting stat. Sorry. The Cardinals and Rockies with Arenado in their lineup are 1-7 in the postseason. And he has struggled terribly in the postseason with in those eight games, 152 average, 242 slugging percentage. That's just awful. He homered in his first career postseason game, but since then, in the next seven that he's played in, 4-for-28, it's batting average of 143, and all four hits were singles. As a Cardinal, 1-for-12 in three playoff games, and he's about 0-for-4, I believe, with runners in scoring position. So basically nothing. Losing stinks. Losing stings, and it stinks. And Arenado has experienced a lot of misery because of it if you just review his career. He wanted to be traded to St. Louis to escape losing and have a chance of winning in the postseason. But since the trade, he has competed in only two postseason games and two postseasons in 4 years, and has played in a grand total of three postseason games in 4 years as a Cardinal. Three postseason games, all losses. If we add up his seasons with the Rockies and the Cardinals, Arenado's two teams are a combined 53 games under 500 in his 12 seasons. That's a lot of losing, okay? That's a lot of losing. So the reason I'm giving you all that background is because it's appropriate for the situation that he is now. Why would Arenado want to stay and be part of a rebuild that likely means more losing, more times of not making the playoffs, at least for the Cardinals in 2025, possibly in 2026? That's no way to wind down a career. And from a team standpoint, Arenado's time in St. Louis has been a bust. And I don't mean individually. He won a gold glove here in 2022. He finished third in the MVP voting, the National League. That 2022 team was really good, but they crapped out in the postseason against the Phillies. But when I say it's been a bust, I meant from the standpoint that he came here because he expected they'd be in the playoffs and they'd be a serious contender every year. And that just hasn't been the case. And when he has had an opportunity to make a difference in the three postseason games he's been a part of, he hasn't come through, you know, 1-for-12. That's why I say it's been a bust in that context of pursuing championships. He's also getting older. He's getting worse. And when his contract expires at the end of 2027, he'll be 36 years old. And then if he wants to continue after that, which I assume he will, by the time he gets rolling into the 2028 season, in the first month of that season, he'll be 38 years old. But anyway, between the start of next season through the end of 2027, that's three seasons, he owed $74 million over the 3 years, but the Rockies are responsible for paying $10 million of that over the next 2 years. So that reduces the obligation to $64 million. There's also a lot of deferred money in the contract. And while that money has been escrowed, which kind of mitigates the responsibility as far as like the pain of the responsibility, if you will, it still complicates any attempt to make a trade. Now, if you want to look at it one way, you know, if you're talking about after we subtract what the Rockies are going to pay and everything else, you know, he'll make $21 million, I think, next season, if we're looking at it that way. And I actually could have that wrong. So I'm going to back off on that. My point is that the yearly salary goes down. In fact, when he gets to 2027, it's $15 million. And in 2026, it'll be a lot lower than it will be in 2025. So basically, without getting into the numbers, because I don't want to botch them, a team that would be interested in trading for Arenado would have to really the only true, really, really tough pain to endure would be 2025 salary, and then it sort of gets a little lesser in terms of the pain of the contract in the subsequent two seasons. Then again, his offense will likely get lesser and lesser and lesser as well, and his defense probably. And then there are some concerns. Is he fully healthy? How's that back? He's getting older. Back problems, I would think, make teams a little nervous. I'm just being kind of realistic here. Is it possible for him to be traded here? Yeah, from here? Yeah, of course it is. But, you know, as we're going to repeat what we said a while back when we did this video, it is, it's not easy and it's not simple. It all depends on how much a team wants him. Now, the Baseball Trade Values website's a good one. Check it out sometime. You can have some fun on there. They do a pretty good job, real good job, of analyzing to the best of their ability based on history and what it tells us. They do a really good job of analyzing, okay, if the Cardinals are going to trade a player, like what would his value be to another team? And if the Cardinals were willing to pay some money, or they would have to pay some money to make the trade go, what are we looking at? So let me just give you a couple of things here from Baseball Trade Values. Quote, he's still productive enough that a team would welcome him, but he's not worth the money that he's owed. And that also does, and that factors in deferrals. That also doesn't include injury risk, which is a significant factor for aging players, even the ones who have been relatively healthy, like Arenado. So they estimate his field value at about an average of $12 million annual average value going forward. In other words, that's not his contract value. That's his performance value, his field value. It's worth about $12 million a year going forward, 12 million times three, right? So, quote, to move him, this is Baseball Trade Values, quote, to move him, we think the Cardinals would have to fork over roughly $25 million in cash in the deal to call it even. And if they want to buy a prospect, in other words, get a higher caliber prospect in return, Baseball Trade Value says they would have to add even more to the deal in terms of the cost that they're picking up to get a prospect of better value back. So they were given the example of like a 45 rated pitcher, which is pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty good. He's got a chance. Quote, they would likely need to kick in $30 million or about $10 million per year. Now, that's just their estimate. I mean, that's not set in granite, right? But I'm just giving you an idea of kind of roughly when people that do a good job of analyzing a player's value on the open market and what would have to be done to make the trade, especially if he has a good amount of money left on his contract. That's their estimate. So I'm passing that along. So there are other aspects to this, to say the least. Well, first of all, why would you trade him? And I was looking at some projections. And it's interesting because the Fangraphs projections and a few other projection systems early on didn't have his slugging percentage bouncing back in 2025. It was bad this past season, 394, and he was a little above league average overall as far as his entire offensive performance. So he was 2% above league average offensively last season. The projections for 2025, Fangraphs and others, have him about 5, 6, 7% above league average offensively in 2025. And that's just 2025. That ain't 26 or 27. I don't have access to that yet. So the point is, that's a guy, he's on the wrong side of the aging curve. His numbers have been dropping, and the projection systems, except for seeing a bounce back in slugging, part of that is based on the fact that the slugging percentage in Major League Baseball overall was down in 2024 by quite a bit. So part of that bounce back attributed to Arenado's name would be part of a bigger picture that there's a presumption that the slugging percentage will bounce back across the majors next season, and he would be part of that. In other words, if I may loosely translate, Major League Baseball didn't like the fact that offense went down last season, especially the home run balls and all that, the slugging. So they're going to do what they like to do best. They're going to doctor the baseball again in time for 2025. Whoo! I tell you what, I could go to the St. Louis Zoo, which I don't live far from, and I could borrow like two or three chimpanzees, okay? And I could put them to work on figuring out how to make a baseball. And I would bet on the chimpanzees. I really would. Anyway, Major League Baseball never just can get out of its own way, even though some things have gotten better. So even with a little bit of a bounce back in slugging percentage, according to the only projections we have for 2025, those projections also have him losing value. Like, for example, his wins above replacement this season, this past season, was about 3.1 wins above replacement level. But the projection systems have that dropping down to 2.8 wins above replacement. So he will actually, if the projections are accurate, he will lose value as a player. And, you know, a 2.8 WAR is not like hideous, but let me put it to you this way. Using the Baseball Reference version of wins above replacement, in 2022, when he finished third, Arenado in the National League MVP balloting finished third. According to the Baseball Reference version, he had 7.7 wins above replacement. That's outstanding. That is phenomenal, right? 7.7 wins above replacement. But in 23 and 24, he averaged 2.45 wins above replacement. So look at the tremendous plummeting of value, enormous plummeting of value over the last 2 years. And that arrow keeps going down. And it probably ain't going to go up. It's going to keep going down. So if you're a team, even if the Cardinals are willing to, you know, fork over $20 million, $25, $30, I don't know. Well, all we can do is speculate. Even if the Cardinals are willing to, you know, help you out by taking some of the money, just like Colorado did when they traded him to the Cardinals. Colorado picked up $51 million of the money's owed to Arenado. So that was the reason why the trade went through ultimately, and Bill DeWitt worked that out with Colorado's owner. They did that. It wasn't the front office. So if he's losing value and he's getting older and you worry about the back and the power has dropped, okay, what would be the motivation to get him? I think the motivation is this. If there is any considerable enthusiasm, it's got to be a team that thinks they can win it all, or they want to take one more shot at winning it all in 2025, or at least they want to be there, right? That applies to the Philadelphia Phillies. They're not happy with the third baseman they have, Alec Bohm. They're just not. And Dave Dombrowski is a maniacal trader, as we all know. Dave Dombrowski will do anything to win another World Series. He is about as aggressive as we have seen in the sport over the last 25, 30 years. So if any team that needs a third baseman and thinks they're this close, right, would be willing to take a risk on Arenado, I figure it would be Philadelphia. But don't ask me what the Cardinals could get in return, because I don't know. Again, this is very complicated. And a lot of what they would get in a potential deal, a lot of it is predicated on how much they're willing to pick up in terms of the salary cost going forward. It's a kind of a sliding scale. So I just can't sit here and give you names. I would be a fraud. I'd be a total phony faker if I did that. All right. It's just premature. But the point is, the Cardinals shouldn't expect to get all that much, if anything good, if this is a straight up salary dump. And it's not a straight up. It would not be a straight up salary dump. But anyway, let me get back to that in a minute. There's a lot of talk in Houston that they're going to lose Alex Bregman as a free agent, their third baseman, been their mainstay on all those great teams. They still think they have a good enough team to maybe make one more run at it, and they still have some players that can help them do that. But they're probably going to need a third baseman. And I will say this, if Nolan Arenado, you know, is looking to get a power boost, hitting in that ballpark would help him, I would think, anyway, right? And I know it would help him playing in Philadelphia. I did look this up. I neglected, and I'm sorry to look it up in terms of the home field in Houston, but StatCast projected if Arenado, for example, had played in Philadelphia, he would have hit four or five more home runs compared to Busch Stadium. And I'm sure with Houston it's similar. I'll double back on that and check. So maybe the Dodgers, but I think everyone assumes the Dodgers because he's a SoCal guy and because the Dodgers are very, very aggressive, as we know. But, you know, their salary obligations to Ohtani and Yamamoto and some others, I think, are going to be going up next season. The other thing is they got Max Muncy as part of a pretty much a platoon situation at third, and it's actually worked out really well for them. Muncy has a full year to go on his contract. And I think maybe even a year after that, again, I apologize. I'm a detail man, but today I did drop the rock on a couple things. But anyway, it's not like they are desperate for a third baseman. And I don't know that Andrew Friedman in that front office, they see the same things we do about Arenado, and they read the same data. In fact, their data is, they've got such an incredible analytics department. They get things scoped out better than anybody in the game, that front office. And they see some stuff like, for example, last year, Arenado's hard hit rate was 31.6%. For context, that was in the bottom 12 of the major leagues, bottom 12% of all major league hitters. Now you say, well, in the past, I thought I've heard you say, Bernie, and other people say that he's never been had a really good hard hit rate. And that's true. He's been an anomaly in that way. But in 23, excuse me, in 22 and 23, in 2023 and 2024, if we look at his hard hit rates, right, he averaged 38.5%. Balls that he hit, how many are hard hit? It was 38.5% previous 2 years, right? That dropped 7 points to 31 and change. That's a pretty big drop, okay? His bat speed was in the bottom 28%. His barrel rate was in the bottom 6%. His expected slugging percentage based on the quality of contact was only 361. So he actually slugged a little bit better than he was expected to based on the quality of the contact. And I was looking at I know some people, the expected slugging and all this stuff drives you crazy. You don't have any use for it. I appreciate that. But I'm just going to, for the people that do get something out of it, I'm going to tell you this. You know, if you say expected, it just means based on your quality of contact. And how your volume of quality contact, you hit the ball hard on a consistent basis, you barrel it up on a consistent basis than a lot of hitters, your expected stats, you should get an expected batting average of this or an expected slugging percentage of this. I prefer what the actual stuff is, but I'm telling you, there's another way to indicate how much exactly was there in terms of a hitter's performance based on a couple of really important indicators. So if you look at 2021, Arenado's first year of the Cardinal, his expected slugging percentage was 420, and he exceeded that. All right, he's got something cooking. All right, when you get to 2022, his expected slugging percentage was 445. I think he exceeded that as well. Now we get into 2023, it went down by 10 points. And then in 2024, his expected slugging percentage was 361. And again, just 2 years earlier, it had been 445. So what he should be slugging based on contact, right, has dropped by a massive amount over the last 2 years. And you don't think a sharp organization like the Dodgers are going to look at that? Listen, the Dodgers probably make the Cardinals pay them, as smart as they are. Andrew Friedman and them fellas, they probably get the Cardinals to say, well, we'll not only pick up his contract, but how about if we give you another $10 million? Actually, yeah, that's against the rules, but I can make a joke, can't I? It's not, even if it's not that funny. So, in other words, you ain't going to sneak something by the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's why I personally scoff a little bit at this idea that, you know, the Dodgers will be like first in line. If it's cheap enough, the Dodgers will take a look at anything. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but I wouldn't make them the presumptive favorite for a new destination, a new home for Arenado. So anyway, I wanted to pass that along. The other motivating factor here for the Cardinals to move him, there's two. You don't want the negative energy in the clubhouse. You don't want a situation where the Cardinals are not going to be a playoff team. Maybe they'll be a losing team. I'm not going to sit here and predict the record because we don't know what the roster is going to be just yet, do we? I'm not expecting to add much, but I'm talking about in terms of players leaving or players being traded or maybe some, you know, a couple of players they decide aren't going to play as much as they used to, whatever. We just don't know. Pitchers and hitters. But it's not certainly they're not a championship contender. I know that, and it probably won't be in 2026. After that, we'll see. But I don't think you want – I talked about all the losing that Arenado had gone through. I don't think you want that in your clubhouse because he doesn't handle it well. And I know my friend Matt Pauly at KMOX, we were doing a thing we're doing every day called Gas House Gang, and you can go to the KMOX site to look at that. And we mix it up every day. There's all four of us in the sports department do at noon every day on Monday. It's all four of us participating in about a 45, 50 minute roundtable. And then the rest of the week is split up. There's like two guys a day and we kind of rotate. I did it today. I'll be also be doing it tomorrow. But Matt Pauly mentioned that, you know, last year it kind of kicked in with Arenado that he should try to make the best of this. And he went out of his way to try to help young players. And I do appreciate that. But I also must note, I feel compelled to note that he's been here 4 years. So in other words, he waited until he was about 3.5 years in before he decided to try to be a leader. I don't know. Am I supposed to be really impressed by that? No. And that's even before, like, he did try later in the season, 24. That was before he knew that the Cardinals were actually going to go down this path where they were going to go into a moderate rebuild for a couple of years. So if there's one player that when John Mozeliak made the call to the no trade clause guys, if there's one player, it would make all the sense in the world for him to want to get out. It would be Nolan Arenado. And I think you don't want an unhappy Nolan Arenado in St. Louis. We've kind of seen that film before a few times, right? Not fun to watch. So I felt it's important to reiterate that. The other thing, if this is all about playing young guys and all that stuff, right? Oh, we got to give the young players an opportunity. Well, by moving Contreras to first base, which they should have, and I love the move and I love it even more because I think the bonus in this is that Ivan Herrera, unless the Cardinals are complete idiots, Ivan Herrera will get a lot of time. I mean, a lot of at-bats at the catcher position. You know, the Cardinals, for the two best hitters were last year in terms of minimum of 250 plate appearances. The two best hitters last season in terms of one of the fancy pad stats, weighted runs created plus. All you need to know is how much a guy's above average. Their two best hitters last year were number one, Wilson Contreras. He was 40% above average. And Herrera was second at 27% above average. So now by moving Contreras to first, you're going to have him in there all the time or DHing. He's going to be playing a lot. He ain't going to get beat up because he ain't behind the plate. And here's a guy that's 40% above average offensively last season. The problem is he only played 84 games because of injuries. And then you have your second best hitter who's only going to get better and better and better. Again, unless the Cardinals are remarkably stupid, Herrera will be getting most of the at-bats or the lion's share of at-bats at the catcher position next season. And if they don't do it, then what the heck is the point about 2025? Oh, we're going to give full opportunities to young hitters. Well, we're going to turn it over to them. A guy who in limited opportunities was your second best hitter in 2024? What? He going to sit behind Pedro Páez, huh? Is that right? Is that right? Could you run that one by Chaim Bloom, maybe? Maybe see what he thinks about that? Whew. Anyway, I still don't trust these people. I won't trust them until there's you get the broom out, all right? Anyway, but you don't have first base with Goldie gone, but Contreras moving in. You don't have first base is kind of a little bit of a open land to look at young hitters. Now, Mozeliak indicated that Burleson would play first base, and he said Burleson will DH. And he said, you know, we plan to use Contreras as a DH as well and play first base. And Mo even told the reporters that whoever's playing first base that day, there's a good chance the other guy's the DH. So it ain't like Burleson's getting cut out of the deal here. Luke and Baker, maybe so. Do you want Contreras at first base with Herrera behind the plate, your two best hitters getting maximum at-bats next season? Or do you want to water that down by not having Contreras at first base, still having him behind the plate, still getting beat up? And then you all are the ones that talk about how bad defensively he is. So this obsession with Luke and Baker is going to have to just calm down a little bit. All right. In 2 years, and granted, it's a small sample size, but in 2 years, he's hitting about 150 major league at bats. And I admit it's not enough to go on. Is it 198 with a 341 slug and a 29% strikeout rate? I don't know. I don't see Mark McGuire circa 1998 there. Pardon me. I like the kid, but I don't see, and he's not a kid, he's 28. He'll be 28. I'm not sure where the at-bats come now that you move Contreras to first base. And now that you, the president of baseball, Arbor, said Contreras and Burleson will see a lot of time in DH. So where does that leave Baker exactly? I mean, I'm just saying. I prefer, I really try hard to be realistic about these things, pragmatic. So anyway, with first base kind of sealed off, right? If you trade Arenado, you open up third base and you open up for a lot of potential combinations. You can move Brendan Donovan to third base, play a lot there. Gorman stays at second. You got Thomas Sejesi. He can play second. He can play short. He can play third. They're going to keep him busy next year. You can move Gorman to third base. Not that he would be there every single day. Not saying that at all. But he would be part of the mix and could also maybe play a little second base. But anyway, if you want to see what Gorman can do, playing his natural position, and whether this would help him relax as a hitter, I don't know. Third base without Arenado is a spot where you can take a look at guys. I didn't include Jordan Walker on the list, but anybody, if you want to, go ahead. But my strong sense, talking to some people, is they're committed to putting him in right field. The difference is, before you get all bent out of shape, the difference is it's finally occurred to them, the people that run the Cardinals, we gotta like coach him up how to play right field. They did it with Willie McGee, and Jordan Walker did get better late in the 2023 rookie season. They sent him down to Memphis where there is no outfield instructor, and he immediately cratered again defensively. They've mishandled him in terms of right field from the time he was in the minors. If there's a way to screw up, just to absolutely destroy all confidence or all success of a position change, the number one example that I've ever witnessed is the Cardinals with Jordan Walker. They give him about a month, 5 weeks. He's a third baseman, his young baseball life. He's in double A, not major leagues, in double A in 2022. And they wait, and they knew they had Arenado, and he wasn't going anywhere, right? And they wait until there's about 4 or 5 weeks left in the double A season before they put Walker out there. And oh, by the way, they don't have an outfielder instructor. And then the next stop, you got your 25 games in. Hey, welcome to the big leagues. You're the right fielder. We know you don't know what you're doing out there. We're going to put you out there anyway. How you like that? The incompetency is just overwhelming. It really is. And that's why it disheartens me when I see fans just write off Walker and sort of blame him because he stinks in right field. If they were doing everything they could to prepare him and improve him in right field, if they were doing everything they could and he still was a hopeless case, well, then that's fair game to criticize him. But we all know the Cardinals have screwed a bunch of things up. So why would we draw a line at Walker? In other words, the people that want to blame the player rather than the team, or to make it all about the player and let the team just give him a little criticism. Well, I don't understand that, because we all pretty much agree that this has been a lot of buffoonery in the decision-making progress, and especially how they prepare guys for the major leagues. So if we all agree that it has been one buffoon job after another, why would we change the standards for that and then all of a sudden say, oh, no, that's on Jordan Walker, Bernie. That's on Jordan Walker. I'm not giving him a free pass. That's not on the Cardinals. That's on Jordan Walker. But yet you agree that they are utter buffoons and how they've screwed up so many players by not getting them properly prepared for the major leagues. No, that's on Jordan Walker. No, it's on the Cardinals, okay? Buffoonery, all right? Anyway, I think Walker's going to be out in right field, but, you know, third base, I guess, somehow would be an alternative. But anyway, I'm rambling, and I apologize, but it was a lot to chew on there, and it's in everybody's best interest to trade Nolan Arenado, and it's really in Arenado's best interest because, to use that old phrase, don't want an unhappy camper in here. You're going to have young guys that are fired up. They're all playing. Some new leaders can emerge. Do you really want him in the middle of that? Because he's not a good leader anyway. It's time for next generation of Cardinals to take the leadership reins. Having him around complicates that as well. See, that's why you should watch these things to the end. I save some of the best points for the end. That said, I'll shut up now. Thank you, as always, for watching the Bernie Miklas Show here on YouTube.